From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen. Today we continue with Coming Home, our Season 3 interview series. We're talking with couples who once lived abroad but who decided to return to their home country to raise their children. From unexpected challenges to fulfilling experiences, these conversations reveal a variety of perspectives, both cultural and personal. Today I'm joined by Ernesto Arias Palomo and María Ángeles Recuero Checa. Born and raised in central Spain, they met during their PhD studies in Madrid. They decided to continue their research in the U.S., which led them to work at UC Berkeley in California and later at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. They returned to Madrid in 2017, where María Ángeles now works as a high school biology teacher and Ernesto is the head of a research lab at the Spanish Scientific Research Council. Welcome, Ernesto and María Ángeles. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us here.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation, mainly because I'm an American who moved to Spain, and so your situation and your experience is almost the mirror image of mine. So before we get to that part of the story, why don't you share a bit about your life before you left Spain, where you're from, what your childhoods were like?
Mm-hmm. So we are from different parts, from the center of Spain. I'm from Cuenca.
And I'm from a small village in Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
And we both moved to Madrid for our undergrad studies. And we actually lived there before we actually met, like for 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then we met during our PhD studies in the biochemistry or biology research field. So we met basically in the lab. So I guess that we spent too much time working.
That's the secret. Lots of time in the lab.
Yeah.
Well, María Ángeles, you mentioned that you're from a really small village. How small is your village?
There are actually 3,000 people living
okay.
there.
Okay, so that's pretty small.
Yeah, it's a small,
okay.
small place.
And are your parents still there? Is your family
yeah,
still there?
My family is still there. My
okay.
sister lives in a village nearby, so like 10 kilometers away from them.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. So, you've gotten us up to the point where you're both living in Madrid. You're both trying to get your PhD. Did mm-hmm. you finish your PhDs in Madrid?
Yes, we did.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, around okay. 2008 or 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you decide to move to the States. How mm-hmm. did that happen? Mm-hmm. Lead us through that a little bit.
Yeah, in our field, it's really common to go abroad after you finish your PhD. And many people go either to the UK and Germany in Europe or to the United States. And we had the chance to go there in 2009 for a short scholarship. And we traveled around a little bit and we stayed there at UC Berkeley. And we really like the atmosphere. That city is really a vibrant city with full of international people. Many young people live there with children. So it was really, really nice to be there. So we decided that it could be our place to go after we finish our PhDs.
And are you talking specifically about Berkeley or San Francisco?
I'm talking about Berkeley.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So San Francisco is close. It's just across the bay, but it's like probably a 40-minute trip by train. And San Francisco is Berkeley is already an expensive city, but San Francisco is more expensive than Berkeley, and it's far away. So we decided to go to Berkeley.
So when you went to Berkeley on a scholarship, which mm-hmm. I assume you applied for?
During your PhD, you have the chance to, with the scholarship you get in Spain, you have the chance to spend from 3 to 6 months
okay.
at a university abroad. So I decided to go to Berkeley, and it was to take a look, because we already had in mind that we would like to go there. So we said, okay, let's try to see it before we actually decide to go.
So you thought that was sort of it was almost like a scouting trip.
Exactly, yep. It was a scouting trip, and she was doing the short scholarship, and we took the chance to both travel a little bit, take some vacations. We spent like a couple of weeks or so traveling around. And also I took the opportunity to do some interviews as well. So we already started to know like a few labs, and actually it was the one that we actually ended up going to.
Did you both work in the same lab in Berkeley?
No, we work at different labs.
Yeah, we started to split apart a little bit in Berkeley.
So not in the same lab.
Not the same. not anymore.
Yeah, enough is enough, right? Okay, how long did you end up staying in California?
So we were there for about 3 years or so.
Okay.
Yeah, in total in California.
Did you know that you would be staying that long, or did you think it would be longer?
The scholarship was initially for 2 years, so we knew that at least 2 years.
Was 2 years. Okay.
Yeah. So we went there with the Spanish fellowship that was for 2 years. So we thought that 2 years was the minimum, let's say, and we thought that because 2 years is not a lot to do research. We thought that it could take us a little bit longer, like at least 3 years or so.
Is that because of the length of time that you need for a project, to sort of see a project through as a researcher?
Exactly. Yes, yeah, it takes time, especially if you start from zero, which is almost always the case. It takes time to see the results. And to get enough results to apply for the next job.
Right.
So it takes time. So we thought that it'd be like three years or so. And then after all, we decided to stay for a little bit longer. So in the end, we stayed in the US for almost 7 years.
And how did you end up moving to Baltimore? I mean, that's quite a move.
It was his fault. Actually, his boss's fault.
his boss moved to
Baltimore.
So he followed your boss from Berkeley to Baltimore.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. So he decided to move the lab for personal and professional reasons. And we actually thought about it for quite a bit. And in the end, we decided, because it was kind of like a midpoint, we could either stay in California, go somewhere else, or move to Baltimore. And in the end, we thought that the best for both of us could be to go to Baltimore, and we decided to go there. And it was actually, I think it was a good move, at least from the professional point of view.
Yeah, he was in the middle of a project and he could finish it there.
And it went well.
Because it was the same lab.
And I ended up working for my boss in California, but from Baltimore. So I was actually in a lab with another PI, but working for my boss in California.
Interesting.
So it was really, it worked out well.
So I'd love to hear your impressions about East Coast versus West Coast, and also Berkeley versus Baltimore. I mean, those are very different cities.
Very different, yes.
So, yeah, regarding the West Coast versus the East Coast, the West Coast, at least in our experience, and the Berkeley and San Francisco area, it's truly international. It's full of young people doing all kind of things, research or IT work, all kind of interesting things. It's also the weird thing is that the nice thing is that it's interesting from the point of view of the people that lives and works there, and also from the point of view of the nature and the surrounding areas. It's really interesting. There are
the national
many national parks
are amazing,
and it's just Mm-hmm. Outstanding. It's really beautiful.
For instance, Yosemite is only 4 hours away from Berkeley, so we went there many times, and we did the typical round trip from San Francisco to LA, San Diego, Las Vegas, Yosemite like a couple of times. It's really nice. Yeah.
The only thing, at least for us, is that we also had the impression during our time in Berkeley that it was like a bubble somehow in the States. I'm not saying that from a negative or bad point of view. Mm-hmm. It's just that it was it's so different to anything else, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's helpful just to acknowledge, you know, that's how it felt. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it feels that way to other people or whether it actually is. I mean, if that's how you felt, that's a really important observation.
And also actually because the prices there for everything, it's a really expensive area. And in the last year, it's even worse because of the Silicon Valley environment, atmosphere, like all
so
these people.
So everything's being driven up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh. And
but I'm guessing you were able to live there. I mean, I'm sure that you were, you know, paid an appropriate salary so that you were able to pay for your rent and your living expenses.
Yeah, well, initially it was a little bit shocking because we thought that it'd be easier from that point of view. And it was surprising to see that the prices were so high. Mm-hmm. Like renting a regular one-bedroom apartment could be between $1,800 or $2,000
and unfurnished.
Unfurnished.
Because in Spain, when you say, well, I'm renting an apartment, it's almost always furnished, right?
Yeah.
And in the United States, it's almost never furnished.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to buy everything. I don't know how many trips we made to IKEA to furnish the...
And we were lucky because there was an IKEA that they recently opened a couple of years earlier.
Exactly.
Did you furnish everything with IKEA?
No, we found many things in the second-hand market that works really well there, and it's really...
Yeah, that's something that we miss a lot.
Mm-hmm. I also miss that. Just like yard sales.
And yard sales was a really nice, interesting thing we discovered there.
Yeah, well, you could get anything from pictures to... mattress to almost any kind of
and in Berkeley, since there were so many students there, it was really like every
active.
Weekend you could go somewhere and you could find stuff, because in Baltimore it was a little bit more difficult to find, or you had to be careful because in Baltimore there are some areas that are a little bit sketchy. So you have to be careful a little bit, but
so it sounds, I don't know, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the West Coast might have won your heart a little bit more than the East Coast.
Definitely.
Would you say that's because your interests tend to run to the outdoors? It sounds like you maybe did some hiking out west and spent time in the national parks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we visited a lot of them from the West Coast. We tried to do something like almost every weekend.
So the thing is that the weather there is like a spring all over the year, so that really makes a difference. So when we move to Baltimore, you get the four
seasons
again, and the winters especially are really cold compared to Spain or any other place that we've ever been. So it was a difference. We had much more time in Berkeley to enjoy outdoors than we had in Baltimore. So,
I would love to get into a little more detail about your national park experiences. Do you have anything you want to share about your outings in the national parks? Any specific places you visited or things you saw or did?
Yeah, we went to Yosemite. As I said, we went to Sequoia Park. It's amazing. So the giant sequoias is something that everybody should see in their lives. And once we were hiking in Sequoia Park, we saw, it was the first time we saw a bear, because we've seen many of them during our years there.
Really? And but this was your first time?
This was the first time, and it was really, really scary. Now, with the time, we laugh about it, but that day, I'm telling you that we were not laughing. So we were hiking in in the trail, and it's really funny because in the national parks in general we found that there is like a short trail that is normally like paved and everybody who goes there does, but then you go a little bit on other paths not far from that one, but and suddenly there is nobody around. So that was the case for us, so we started walking and we were like, oh, okay, there's nobody else, let's keep walking. And then we were turning like a little slope, and I was walking first and I saw the bear up in the slope, and I turned around and I said with a very pale face, Ernesto, there is a bear in the trail. And he was like, oh, you're joking, just keep walking. And yeah, when he saw my face, and I was like, no, I'm not joking. And he said, okay, let's turn around and keep walking.
But quietly. Yeah,
so slowly. You turned around and the bear was behind you?
It was right behind. It was, I don't know, mm-hmm. maybe between 10 meters behind us or something 10. Like that.
And was it walking like toward you? Was it following you?
Mm-hmm. But apparently he didn't see us, so... But we were not sure, and we were really scared, and we said, okay, what are we doing? Because if he saw, we had food in our backpacks, that is really scary, because if he smells the food, mm-hmm. he can start running. So we decided to go into a swamp that we had close by.
A and swamp?
Mm-hmm.
You went into the swamp?
We get in.
Yeah,
the
because
swamp.
The thing is that the trail was very narrow, mm-hmm. so there were nowhere to go, and actually there were some people on the other side of the valley, like right in front of us, mm-hmm. That were shouting, look, there is a bear cub in front of us, and look at that, right behind is her mother. And we started to panic.
So were you between the mother and the cub?
No, the two of them were.
So the cub was
us.
The one that was following us, that was already, it was kind of
well,
big.
If you were freaked out by the cub, imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And and we were a little bit scared because, I mean, the bear cub could be more or less dangerous, but I think that if you get in the way between the cub and the mother, then you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
We decided to, there were nowhere to go, so it was either towards the bear or start running or jump into the swamp. Mm-hmm. So
we did that, and then we found out that there was poison ivy. That this is this plant that can get
did,
you like rashes.
Did you get poison ivy?
We didn't. I don't know how because we walked for a while in the
through
swamp.
The poison
in the swamp,
ivy.
So.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. So it was a.
And then
a
what happened? Did they just go away?
Yeah, they just kept walking mm-hmm. along the trail, and they just disappeared. So we mm-hmm. waited like on top of one tree, like for. You
an
know,
hour
like a
or I don't know how long.
I don't know for how long.
Oh,
but
we went back on the trail.
And then went back and yeah.
And we went home.
Oh my gosh. And you guys, and you said that was just the first time you
that
saw
was
bear.
The first
oh
time,
gosh.
Yeah. So actually, I think in our time there, in different like hiking trips, we ended up seeing 5 or 6. In one hike, we found 5 bears already. So in this
on
trip,
one
it was
hike?
On, in one hike.
And
like,
some of them were like 2 meters or so from us.
Oh
they were
gosh.
Really, really close.
So my friends called me from then on the bear magnet. So it was really, really
wow.
funny.
Wow, you guys will never forget that. That's
it was
really amazing.
An amazing experience, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the East Coast. Now, obviously, the coasts in the States are huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk West Coast, East Coast, you could be talking about Berkeley, or you could be talking about Portland, or you could
right.
be talking about Seattle. And when you talk East Coast, maybe you're talking about Baltimore, or maybe you're talking about Florida, you know, which is a very different place. But your experience was specifically Berkeley and then Baltimore. So tell us a little bit about your experience in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so Baltimore is completely different to Berkeley, like we mentioned before. I guess that probably like 60% of the people or so are African American, and it's part of the Rust Belt.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some issues related to unemployment and drug related crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I believe that Baltimore, it's one of the cities in the U.S. with the highest crime rate.
Mm-hmm. Did you experience that? Did you witness anything?
So, well, kind of. So
there was a guy who was shot dead in the block behind us.
Who was shot dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we read that afterwards. We didn't see it at the time. We didn't see anything, but the following day we just read the newspaper and we...
Behind our place, basically.
We saw that it was it was right there. But everything was, like, as he said, drug-related. So you have to be careful what places to walk or not. But because some students have been mugged, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the worst thing that could happen to you if you...
And you kind of... You kind of know, don't you? I went to University of New York City, so mm-hmm. I also have had an experience living in a big city on the East Coast, and you kind of learn, you know, where mm-hmm. to go and where not to go.
Yeah, exactly. No, so actually, we never felt really like mm-hmm. unsafe or insecure. We mm-hmm. we never had that impression. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, like you mentioned, that you need to know where mm-hmm. you're going and
yeah. The thing in Baltimore is that I think in other cities is different. You have everything like very mixed. So like for instance in Madrid, so the city center is usually like nice, and you go to the suburbs, and is where you like find like the more problems or. Mm-hmm. The differences, but in Baltimore, like, is you had a very rich neighborhood, and right next to it, like, one street divided both places, and it was like really on one side mansions, and on the other side of the street, people on the streets, mm-hmm. Ruined houses and everything. So it was just like that. So
like night and day,
totally opposite. And and that was the really interesting and sad thing about Baltimore. Yeah, the differences.
Yeah, there wasn't like a gradient or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was really sharp. The mm-hmm, difference yeah. between the different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Or the different.
Was that surprising to you? You moved from a place that was very different.
Quite surprising. Yeah. It was surprising from, well, I guess that especially compared to Europe, mm-hmm. Compared to Berkeley, maybe, but not so much, because mm-hmm. Berkeley is a pretty rich place, mm-hmm. But it's right next to Oakland, for instance.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which I think is actually getting quite nice, but Oakland also has a few
issues.
Sketchy yeah, mm-hmm. areas as well. So
yeah,
we kind of experienced that as well there.
It's similar to Baltimore in some things, yes. Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. For instance, in Baltimore, we also had, I'm talking about the neighborhoods because once we got on one bus to go to a restaurant for brunch, and when we tried to get on the bus, the driver was behind a safety glass, and there was a safety camera inside the bus, and the driver said, "Are you sure you want to get onto this bus and we said yes, and he said okay, and we sat there like saying okay, we don't know what what to do. And it's true that we went through like some of these neighborhoods, and the people who got on the bus, I think they were more surprised to find us than the opposite.
So, people doing here, yeah.
But we didn't felt insecure or anything. We knew that they were not going to do anything to us. Or,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So often that's the case, isn't it? That mm-hmm. people say, oh, be careful, don't go there. Mm-hmm. Don't. Those people are bad, or those mm-hmm. people are dangerous. And then almost always... you come face to face with a person who lives in that neighborhood, and mm-hmm. that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they they offer you gum or mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it's really interesting that the driver asks you, "Are you sure you want to get
yeah.
to this bus?"
I'll bet that made you stop and think, "Are we sure?" So all told, between Berkeley and Baltimore, I think you were in the States for 5 years. Is that right?
A mm-hmm. little bit longer, almost six and a half.
Mm-hmm. Or something like that. Yeah, we stayed in Baltimore for more than 4 years. In Baltimore?
Three and a half,
mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what was your legal status? I mean, did you ever become U.S. citizens? Did your visa as researchers continue throughout this time? How did that work?
So when we arrived, we had a student... Well, they call it student or researcher visa, and you can have it for 5 years, and that's what we had initially. And then at that point, we had to change to something else, and we actually decided to apply for the green card, for the permanent residency and by ourselves. So we hired a lawyer and tried to get the green card. Mm-hmm. The only thing is that the process is quite long. It takes time. It takes, I don't remember, like a year or so. Mm-hmm. So during the process, we eventually decided to come back to Spain. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get the green card, but we were in the mm-hmm.
Was process. That because after you made the decision to come back to Spain, you just decided to not finish the process of applying for the green card?
Yes, because we've heard that if you don't live in the work or live in the US for 6 months, like during 6 months every year or something like that, you eventually lose the, mm-hmm. the okay. green card. So.
So if you don't live there, it doesn't make any sense to have it.
And also, yeah, it could get kind of chaotic if they made it possible for just, you know, no matter where you live, you can apply for the green card. Can you imagine?
Right, exactly. Yeah, what you can do that we actually did every year is that you can apply for something that is called the diversity lottery or something like that.
Diversity green card.
It's like a lottery that you can mm-hmm. get the green card. Just by
winning the lottery.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's like there are many countries that can apply, and there are others that cannot apply because they already have too many people in the US.
Yeah,
so.
It depends on the number of people that mm-hmm.
oh,
live
really?
In the US.
So it changes every year who's yeah. eligible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's we applied every year. We didn't get it, but we have a couple of friends who already won the lottery.
Oh, really?
Lottery. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And those were friends that you knew while you were in the States, mm-hmm. or friends from Spain?
One, they are both from Spain, but one of them we met him here, and the other one we met her there.
So. Okay. Okay. But they're both Spanish.
They're both okay. Spanish. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, ultimately, as we know, you made the decision to move back to Spain. What did that process look like? When did you start to think? Well, it sounds like maybe you were aware that the end of this 5-year period would arrive at some point. Mm-hmm. But talk us through that a little bit. How did that conversation go, and how did you ultimately make the decision to move back to Spain?
I think we knew that our time in the US would be would end at some point. I think when we moved there, we already knew that. But once we were there, I mean, we were fine and we wouldn't have meant to stay. But I think family was a really important thing to us. And thinking about our parents getting older here in Spain alone. And I mean, I have my sister, but his brothers are both away. So I think that thing was really important to us. And then work related, we thought that we would be able at some point to get good jobs here in Spain as well. So it was a decision of, yeah, okay, we want to stay there because if we decided to stay there, it would have been for a really longer time or forever, I don't know. But once you have kids and they start to grow up in a place, we didn't feel like, okay, when they are 10 years old, we don't feel like changing them and moving them to another country. Mm-hmm. So I think those were the main things that we considered.
Yeah, but it was a difficult decision. Mm-hmm. there were many good things or pros about coming here, but also we felt very comfortable in the US as well. Mm-hmm. We really liked the working environment mm-hmm. of the US.
Mm-hmm. What was it that you liked about the work environment in the US?
What we like, so I guess that the main thing is that the people there are very ambitious, mm-hmm. and they think big, and they try to tackle like big problems. They don't try to go for the next small step in their career. So they try to do big things, and that's something that is really interesting.
It's also interesting from the perspective of someone like me, who's mm-hmm. not a researcher, because when you hear about new research that comes out, so much of it comes out of the United States. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's a matter of like funding or culture. It sounds like, from what you're saying, it sounds like some of it is just culture. You know, people think big, mm-hmm. they tackle big problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you experienced mm-hmm. there as
yes,
researchers?
Definitely.
Yeah, that was our mm-hmm. experience. And that's something that we liked. It was also difficult because from the the personal and familiar point of view, we thought that it'd be nice to raise our daughter in Spain, but we also had our doubts because we also thought that she could have a bright future in the US. She's actually American as well. She mm-hmm. was born there, so. Mm-hmm.
So does she have dual citizenship?
Yeah, mm-hmm. she has. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was a difficult decision. So we thought and we discussed about it for months and years, probably. Yeah,
we hope that we don't regret it when yeah. she's 18 years old.
Well, it's not an easy decision. Mm-hmm. And when family comes into the mix, I mean, mm-hmm. there's really nothing more you can say, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes down to that. It's like, all right, well, mm-hmm. this is what we have to do. I would love to pick your brain a little bit about having had your first child in the States and having had your second child in Spain. They're mm-hmm. very different mm-hmm. systems when it comes to healthcare. Can you share a little bit about those two experiences and how they differed and what they had in common?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. So, as everybody knows, in the US, you have the healthcare is a private system. You get your healthcare through your employment. And here in Spain, you have the social security, which you also get through employment, but it's not something that you lose right after you finish your employment, like happens there. Right. And so, since it's private, you have to always pay something when you go to the doctor. And like, for instance, the childbirth was around $3,000.
Yeah, something like that.
If I remember correctly.
Was that you had insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So $3,000 was the sum that you owed. Mm-hmm. Having used your insurance, then you still had a bill for $3,000.
Yes, definitely. Exactly. I think the total price was like $40,000 or something like that. And I had to pay, like, I don't remember if it was 10%, 20%, whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it came to that, around $3,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I just want to clarify because we do have listeners who live in different cultures and mm-hmm. may or may not be familiar with both of these systems. Mm-hmm. In the United States, there are people who don't have insurance. There are people who do have insurance, but then there are different levels of insurance. Like maybe you have good insurance, or maybe your insurance doesn't really, maybe it's only catastrophic, mm-hmm. for example. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that your insurance was good. And
yes,
given that you both worked mm-hmm. at Johns Hopkins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you probably gave birth at Johns Hopkins.
Yes, we did.
So that's an mm-hmm. incredibly positive experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then in the Spanish system, correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, my experience with Spain is as an immigrant, although I have been here for many years, but there are not people who are uninsured, unless, you know, it's someone who's just arrived as maybe an illegal immigrant
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've ever met anyone in Spain who's uninsured.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes,
well, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. I think that's correct.
It's a public system, so if you are employed, then you know a percentage is taken out of your paycheck every month, and mm-hmm. a pretty substantial mm-hmm. percentage.
Mm-hmm. It is.
I mean, it's definitely not free.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, I have one child. He was born in Spain, and there I was absolutely flabbergasted when I walked out of the hospital with my son, and there was no sort of mm-hmm. billing mm-hmm. office or window with some kind
yeah.
of invoice.
The thing in the US is that you never know. I was always scared when I got a bill from the doctor because you never knew how much would end up
yeah.
Paying. So you go to the doctor for anything, for a checkup, for whatever reason, and then you don't know what you are going to pay. Everything is so obscure somehow that it's really
yeah, and there's okay. no sort of standard scale
mm-hmm.
that you
yes.
can access and say, okay, well, this will be $300
mm-hmm.
or this will be $30.
Yeah. And there are some things that are confusing as well because I guess that some things are covered by your insurance. But for instance, in Spain, the public system doesn't cover like dental
mm-hmm.
healthcare. And so that should be somehow similar to the US if you don't have like a dental insurance. And but actually, like dental healthcare in the US is like 10 times more expensive than here.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Spain,
you mean the monthly cost, like buying the
protection? No, if you don't have a dental insurance there, and you go to the doctor, the bill that you receive, like specifically for a wisdom teeth removal, we had, I think the price they gave us was like $2,000 for one teeth.
Okay.
While here it was 200 euros. So that difference. So
and it's not covered here as well by the public
system.
Yeah,
but paying so 200 out of pocket is very different than paying 2,000.
Yeah, exactly. I mean.
So how did you handle that? Did you wait and have it removed in Spain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually, it was cheaper just coming here for Christmas and have our wisdom teeth removed.
With the flight and everything, it was cheaper to get them here removed than there. Mm-hmm. So
we don't know why. Good thing you looked into that before. Instead of just assuming. You'd been there long enough, you knew not to assume. You know, I've never actually had this conversation with someone before, but I'd love to hear what you think. You know, people talk a lot about the private system in the United States. Obviously, it's a flawed system, and there are a lot of people who are offering different solutions. Or, you know, should we just tweak it a little bit, or should we just completely overhaul it? Obviously, some of the Democratic candidates now are debating about we should model a public system on, you know, different European countries. And, you know, that's a debate for another day, I think. But one thing that I have felt as a person living in this system in Spain, which we've just described, is a certain measure of calm. And, like, there's not that feeling of stress. There's not that feeling of, oh, my God, am I going to go bankrupt when this bill comes in the mail? Does that sort of describe what you also experienced, or would you put it differently?
I describe it like you said. Definitely, I agree with you in everything. And, yes, we had different experiences with that. And for instance, we were talking about a woman who ran a bakery, and she got cancer, and she went bankrupt because of that, because she didn't have any money. I mean, it's a long process and costly.
Did she have insurance?
I'm not sure if she had, but I'm not sure that the insurance covered like all the treatments, or as I said, like if for a child,
yeah,
you have to pay this. So
yeah, and it
I don't know how you will pay
your insurance. If she did, she own the bakery, or did she just work at the bakery?
I think she was the owner of the bakery.
So because here's another thing that I think a lot of Spanish people don't know is that you can have a job in the United States and not have insurance, because there are lots of, especially like in the service industry, you just earn an hourly wage, and then but the your employer is not required to pay for your insurance.
Yes, actually, that actually happened to Maria Angeles when we first arrived, because she got a part-time job, so the employer wasn't obliged to cover the health insurance. So I mean, she was lucky because she was under.
Yeah,
no, exactly.
Okay.
So you can have actually several part-time jobs
and not be covered.
Yes. Yeah. I often have thought that about like fast food restaurants my experience in Spain is very centered in Cuenca. So like you'll go into a fast food restaurant and see someone year after year after year. And you don't see that in the United States. It's a very, very temporary job. And part of the reason is that none of those people have health benefits. So they're, you know, sort of working their way up to a better job that does have health coverage. But here, you get a job at a fast food restaurant and you hang on to it. I mean, if you don't have a higher education, because you have a monthly salary and your benefits are paid for.
Definitely.
It makes me wonder about those big companies. Like it's very different to have like a, you know, a fast food franchise in a European country where they have to pay all the insurance for all their employees. Whereas in the United States, that's
just
not the case.
Minimum wage.
So that level of stress and everything that you described is what I said before. Like when you receive the mail and you see the bill, it's like, oh my gosh, how much is going to be?
And especially once you have kids as well, because if you're an adult and relatively young, then you might be safe unless something really bad happens to you. But when you start having kids, that's also another source of concern, because if you need to go to the doctor, you need to think twice, not because of the money, but because I mean, once we got to the doctors, to the
emergency room.
ER room with Raquel, because she had difficulty breathing when she was very small.
So, of course, you go to the ER.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your child can't breathe well. Of course,
but
you go to the ER.
But the thing is that if you go there, they say that if it's not an emergency, you end up paying $100. And if it's an emergency, you are covered by the insurance. So you have to think twice if it's really an emergency or not. So That's totally crazy. And So
I mean, we actually got there because it was, I mean, she was fine, but she was just having mm-hmm. trouble breathing, and that was happening, that happened for some time, like mm-hmm. Several days. And so we ended up going to the ER room to see what was happening. Mm-hmm. And they actually told us that she actually turned blue, and we said, no.
No, and we hope.
That was the line between whether it's actually...
Yeah. And
apparently.
Yeah, and since then, actually, they told us to call. So if we had any kind of mm-hmm. question or something like that, they told us, don't come to the ER room, just give her a call.
And we'll tell you if it's really an emergency or not. So it's totally different.
Wow.
So
were you ever in that position where you had to call?
Once, actually, mm-hmm. with Raquel. It was the same.
The
she
same
was having
thing.
Troubles breathing. Mm-hmm. And it was like a really weird situation. Like she was in the floor in the crib. And we had the phone over her. So
they
that the doctor...
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it was... quite
so
stressful.
And in our case that we are not from there, like I mean, we speak English, but we are not very like comfortable
native,
on the phone and explaining all these symptoms over the phone. It was mm-hmm. really
it's
really
different
nervous
when your child
it.
Comes
mm-hmm.
into the mix,
yeah.
isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah, it mm-hmm. is.
Well, I would love to hear one more thing before we wrap up our conversation. And that is, it sounds like when you lived in the United States, there were things that you really missed about Spain. And I'm assuming that now that you live back in Spain, given that you discussed this decision for months and even years, I'm guessing there are things that you really miss about the United States. Can you share the things you miss most, the things you missed most about Spain, the things you miss the most about the United States?
Mm-hmm. So I think when we were in the U.S., we missed from Spain our family, as I said, our friends, the food. We really miss the food. And I think those were the most important things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now what we miss from the U.S., it's, many things related to the work and the working environment. That's something that we miss. We also miss, of course, the friends that we made. We met really, really good friends. And also something that we miss is the social and cultural diversity as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like being in an international place.
Mm-hmm.
Like both
Berkeley
and Baltimore, they were both quite international. So
we made friends from many different countries.
That was
so
really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really have enjoyed our conversation, and it's been really eye-opening. I appreciate you both taking the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
for
you
having
so
us
much
here.
For having us.
Next time on Listen, we'll be joined by Juan Cedeño Zamora and Lisa Porter, a couple who met in Spain, but ultimately settled in the UK, Lisa's home country. Hope you can join us. Listen is sponsored by RAF, cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. The producers of Listen are Lauren Lovett and Laura Muñoz Solera. Our technical director and engineer is Iñaki Martinez, with original music by Lucas Muñoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.